James Fallows, a fellow Rhodes scholar and future Carter speechwriter and industrial planning publicist, explained that the main difference between Clinton and Magaziner was the difference between somebody who planned to run for office and somebody who didn't. When Magaziner moved to Boston, he launched an Alinsky-Hayden-style community organization effort in Brockton, Massachusetts. Later, he went to work for the Boston Consulting Group, or BCG, where he acquired a knack for telling companies how to invest in the technologies of the future. Soon, he was taking jobs from foreign governments to give them the same advice. In 1977, he got a gig consulting to Sweden. The final result of his efforts was dubbed a framework for Swedish industrial policy, in which he called for Sweden to redesign its economy from the top down, discarding old industries and investing heavily in the winners of tomorrow. Even the Swedes rejected it as naive and heavy-handed. The Boston Consulting Group was so embarrassed it tried to make the report disappear. Told by a red-faced BCG he shouldn't do any more governmental planning, Magaziner decided to start his own firm. In 1979, he founded Telesis, which means intelligently planned progress, a nice summation of an attitude described throughout his book. In 1980, Magaziner wrote a book titled Japanese Industrial Policy. In 1982, he co-wrote a book on industrial policy with Robert Reich, a Yale Law School classmate of the Clintons as well as a fellow Rhodes Scholar. In 1984, at the age of 36, he penned a giant plan for the state of Rhode Island, the most ambitious state-level industrial planning effort in memory. Dubbed the Greenhouse Compact, the plan envisioned the state as a greenhouse for the right technologies, that is, technologies the government was smart enough to pick, even though the market wasn't. The voters of Rhode Island rejected the measure handily. One could go on, but you get the point. Now, does it seem likely that the Clintons, who'd known Magaziner for 20 years, expected that he'd come up with anything other than a corporatist strategy for American healthcare the moment they picked him? All of the studying, the meetings, the towers of briefing books, and the forests of file folders, these were all props in a kabuki dance that had been scripted and blocked out well in advance. Or consider fellow Yale Robert Reich. We've already touched on his views on industrial policy in the third way, but it's worth looking at Reich as a true acolyte of the religion of government. I have been openly disdainful of psychological theorizing in earlier chapters, but how can we see Robert Reich as anything but a walking Sorellian myth, a one-man band belting out noble lies for the cause?